Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, yesterday we had leap year. Today we have in like a lamb and out like a lion here in where I'm located, so not sure how Texas is, but remember it was always the...
Texas is about perfect.
So you're going to go come in like a lamb and go out like a lamb?
No. I like the wind. I enjoy it. Comes in like a lion, goes out like a lamb. That's what they say about March. Here in Texas, we say it comes in like an illegal alien and it goes out like a Yankee. Little difference, but it's the same fundamental idea.
Only in March?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. But, that saying could be either or, it's just not always in like a lion, out like a lamb. Depends on how the first day of March is out.
Well,
did you get that?
Not exactly.
All right. Well, let me look at it this way.
Later.
We have gold down 7 points. So, hey, it's going to end the month high. So we had gold down 740 today at 1231.90. We have silver down 6 at 1493. Platinum was up 4 at 941 with palladium up. Palladium had a big day today, up 24, almost 5% at 520. And the USDX today is up 0.14 at 98.31 with crude oil up 58 at 34.33. And the paper markets today, I guess they love Super Tuesday. The market was up 346 points at 16,863. The NASDAQ up 131 at 4689. The S&P was up 46 at 1978. And the 10-year yield started to move a little bit back up, 1.83. The euro, 109. And the world markets were all up, with Germany coming in at about 2.33%. So paper markets are happy, and we'll see how Super Tuesday ends. I don't think anybody has any doubt about how it's going to end for the...
I know when it's going to end.
I hope soon.
11:59.
11:59.
Mm-hmm. Just a little after that.
Well, they had February auto sales. That was the latest sign, again, that they tell us that the economy and the U.S. consumer is still healthy. Of course, China is still coming out with some bad economic data. Oil, you're seeing oil beginning to rise up. So I guess all those problems, all those bad dates, all those bad junk bonds and everything, I guess the worst is over in that area. So, again, it's just really kind of silly how, you know, you can have oil go to 26, only to 34. I mean, yes, that's a big jump, but still. Put it in a little bit of reality here, folks, and that market is still, that area is still, problems are still yet to come. So, but hey, they're looking at the Fed bringing in again. This will be another distraction, maybe a little bit different one than the election as far as the Fed. Will she or won't she? And when will she, if she does, have the next rate hike? So, I mean, it's just...
Well, it's kind of like the Roman circuses.
Pretty much.
You know, in this spring, we have Janet Yellen and her trained economists, and they're going and we're wondering what kind of tricks they're going to show us this time. And the truth is, I don't think they have any more tricks. And when do you think they're going to raise interest rates again? Well, are they?
You know what? These markets are acting so irrationally. I mean, they're just, you just really don't know. We know all this information is false. I don't think she will. Is she going to do another token just to test the markets and so forth? Highly unlikely.
I don't think she'd dare.
I don't think so either.
I mean, they've got to see a return to what happened. You know, I don't know that that little quarter point rise was enough to precipitate the big jump in gold and the dramatic fall in the markets. But there was a, you know, it happened, one happened and then the other happened. And that's necessarily cause and effect, but interesting coincidence. But does she dare another quarter point raise and risk having the stock markets fall another several hundred points? I think she could get herself in a lot of trouble if she dared to do that. From my perspective, she's got to see those markets restored to where they were. It's got to go back up into probably the 17,000 range before she should be willing to even try, you know.
Well,
another quarter point. Let's hope everything doesn't crash.
Well, I think if Donald gets elected, I think her job will be, I think we'll be seeing a new...
You're fired.
You're fired.
Yeah, right.
Yes. I can't imagine her and him getting along. Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, that's just my opinion. Earlier, speaking of Federal Reserve people, I was watching several videos. They were very short videos with Greenspan on, and they were asking, the interviewer had asked Alan Greenspan, "Are we in trouble financially, economically?" And he came out very simply and said, "Yep." You know, the interview goes on. They talk about China being the big problem. You know, Greenspan is, you know, productivity. It was always about productivity with Greenspan. And he says he's never seen so many unknowns. He says there's just huge unknowns out there. And he's never seen so many unknowns in an economy before. And he's not optimistic. He says things won't be better, can't be better, until they resolve the entitlement programs.
And what he means by that is they're going to have to cut entitlements.
Mm-hmm.
What he's ultimately saying, and I've got a copy of from Bloomberg about the same interview, and Greenspan says negative rates warp investment behavior.
Yep.
All I can say is, well, boy, that Greenspan fellow sure is a smart one, don't you think? I mean, who would ever guess that long-term negative interest rates would eventually distort savings and investments? This guy Greenspan is a really profound one, I'll tell you. In fact, I'll bet Mr. Greenspan could even teach us a lot about playing with matches. I mean, he's got that kind of intellect where he can see danger and consequence where the rest of us don't pick up on it. I'm being facetious, of course. The point is, anybody with an IQ over 90 ought to be able, on a bank account, ought to be able to say, you know, I think there's something funny about this, these negative interest rates. I think this is a bad deal, and of course it's a bad deal. He describes the problem, fundamental problem with negative interest rates. Say, I wouldn't say it's dangerous, but it is clearly not productive. And as you say, he focuses on productivity.
Mm-hmm.
Greenspan turned 90 on March 6th, says he's not optimistic about growth in the U.S. or globally, largely because business investment is so low, undermining the company's ability to be more productive. Productivity is dead in the water, according to Greenspan. Real capital investment is way below average. Why? Because business people are very uncertain about the future. I'm not convinced that uncertainty. You know, to simply say uncertainty is scaring them off from investing. Then maybe there's some truth to that. I don't doubt that there's some truth, but it's not just uncertainty; it's outright fear. People are looking around and say, "This can't last. I'm not going to go into deeper into debt in order to invest in something when the whole system looks shaky on the verge of a significant problem." To say uncertainty, people in these large governmental institutions, they use language in a way that understates what they think is happening, or at least that's the way it appears to me. Talks about uncertainty. I'd say fear. That's what's got them going. They're scared. Greenspan blamed excessive regulation for limited lending and government entitlement programs for crowding out investment. Now, this is where we're going. This is Greenspan's message. He's saying that social welfare programs are going to have to be cut in the foreseeable future. Americans who rely on entitlements for food and shelter are going to find themselves increasingly hungry and or cold. Now, Greenspan doesn't agree with that. He says that's the implication of what he says. He doesn't expressly agree with it, however. He says, I don't see how we can essentially bring the entitlements down. He doesn't think it's possible to cut entitlements. And I think the reason he doesn't think it's possible is people who receive entitlements, some of them are going to just set fires to cities. You can't take my entitlements away. I'm entitled. All right? Greenspan says, which means we're going to get some form of political crisis, which is what we're in the process of getting now. Where this ends, I do not know. That's Greenspan talking. He's saying we can't reduce welfare to the poor without causing riots and fires and rest of that sort of thing. That might be so. But we also can't continue to sacrifice whatever productivity remains in this country and whatever standard of living we still enjoy, people who work for a living still enjoy, to subsidize a bunch of people that are non-productive. Can't be afforded. This isn't a political statement. It's the idea you can't eat your seed corn. You understand? You have to have something to produce for next year. And if you don't have it, everybody's going to starve. And it's the same thing we have right now. We have too much money going to people who aren't productive. I've seen one welfare recipient in California did an article on it. She said, you wouldn't believe how well I live on welfare. She's made a science of it. She goes to every place she can get anything and winds up living wonderfully well. You know, I think she was making something like $50,000 a year off welfare, and she never had to go to work. That can't continue. Somebody's got to set this thing up where if you're on welfare, fine, you're on welfare, but you don't get more than, say, $20,000 a year. That's a maximum. Take all the programs, put them together, use one program, use 20 programs, whatever you got. You get 20 grand a year. It's maximum you can get. If you want more, you have to get a job. Something like that's going to have to happen sooner or later, or we are going to essentially wipe out the productive elements of this society. And when you do that, there isn't going to be anything to eat. We're going to be like Venezuela. They're having a food crisis. There's no food down there. And you look at that and you think to yourself, how can this be that there's no food? They live in a tropical region of the world. Plants grow without a whole lot of trouble or care, and yet they're out of food. It doesn't make sense except when you factor in the central planners of Venezuela, who've managed to cripple their economy and push them into poverty. Right? And there will be chaos as a result. I don't doubt that our central planners will ultimately do the same. Rather than admit they've made some huge, enormous mistakes, they'll keep trying to get through this problem without admitting they've made colossal mistakes. And if you've listened to this program before, you know what our notion of the colossal mistake is. It's going to a fiat currency, a debt-based monetary system. It's crazy. It's insane.
It's not a mistake. It's by design.
Well, it's whatever it is, but somebody's got to just, it may be by design, but still, if it's going to collapse the economy, unless that's what they wanted.
Absolutely. They wanted to take as much as they could take, and you still got 20 trillion sitting there in retirement accounts and IRAs that they're just panting over to get.
Well, somebody ought to get them. Somebody ought to start panting over getting them, and then we might see some sort of an improvement. But in any case, Greenspan doesn't see anything happening. He says we're giving too much money as entitlements. We don't have enough left to stimulate production. All right? And he looks at it from the production side. We've had people running the Federal Reserve since Greenspan left who look at it from the consumer side. And all we got to do is increase demand, and then the economy will get hot again. Well, I don't know. Is the glass half empty or is it half full? Who's right? You know, do you increase demand or do you increase production? Where do you focus your energy? I think the productivity is key. I agree with Greenspan in this regard. I think when the United States of America was the richest and most prosperous country on the face of the earth, it was because we were highly productive. It was not because we were big spenders. It was not because we went into debt and we borrowed deeply. It was because we were highly productive. We ship jobs and industries overseas. We've invited illegal aliens into the country. We have increased entitlements, and with that, taxes on the parts of the people who are productive. There has been a shift in values here that's been self-destructive for all of us. It's been hurting all of us. And some people are going to sit back, well, we've got to have compassion for the poor. Well, yeah, you do. All right? I get that. But you also have to have compassion for the people that work for a living. And that means they're entitled to full day's pay for, you know, full day's work. And they're not getting it insofar as they're paying taxes to support the people that aren't working. I know this is a complex problem because we've got a bunch of rich people in this country. They're not, you know, they're overpaid. There's, in their own way, the only people who are working for a living in this country are the middle class, and we're running out. The super rich and the welfare recipients both have a great deal in common. They both think they're entitled to live without working. And somewhere along the line, that's got to be changed, and people have to go back to, you actually have to go back to work, and if you want more, you got to produce more. And that message has to be communicated to people rather than telling them, oh, you're entitled.
Actually, they both live off the middle class.
Well, I know. The middle class are the other mules that pull the plow and are running out of them. They support the super rich. They support the super poor.
Yep.
Right? We've got parasites at both ends of the economic spectrum, and the middle class has been dragging, you know, trying to pull the plow and pull the plow and pull the plow, and we're running out of them. We're running them off. We're killing them. They're the ones we need. We don't need the super rich. We don't need the super poor. They're just also rans, you know. And to address this problem, someone's going to have to say some things that are hugely politically incorrect. And there's going to have to be, somebody's going to have to stand up who's willing to be accused of having no compassion, or is that? But this is one of those things. This is a lifeboat mentality.
You know what? There's more
in the boat,
compassion.
You got to throw a couple over the side or you're all going to drown.
there's more compassion in trying to supply work and jobs for people than it is to give them a handout.
I agree. Well, you know, I mean, sometimes people need a handout.
Absolutely. But you know what? Sometimes people
get the lifestyle out of it.
And what's interesting now is sometimes those who really need the help, they can't ever get it.
Yeah, I know that. The ones who don't need the help really are probably more adept at getting it. And that's the top and the bottom. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in about 2.5 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all the gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I'm going to try a little special here, something a little bit different, and I really do have just a very limited supply of these, and the package is going to go for $515, and what it is, you know, once in a while I get something that I view as a novelty, and this is certainly a novelty. So if you have your collections and you have your gold and silver coins as far as your, you know, your protection of your purchasing power. This is a neat little thing. I got one from, it's a Mark Twain. It's a silver dollar proof. Mark Twain, and on the front is a picture of Mark Twain, and on the back it has the steamboat. and the gold coin is very much the same. So there's a silver and there's a gold coin. The gold coin is a $5 gold piece, and that is also a proof coin. And you also have the silver dollar is also a proof coin. Now there's 100,000 of the $5 gold pieces that they're going to mint or have minted, and there's only 350,000 of the silver coins that they have minted. And these are both uncirculated coins. It comes in the U.S. Mint's a little velvet-type container. It has a piece of authenticity in it, and it comes in a nice little cardboard box. So they're very nice coins, and it's something great to, it makes a wonderful gift. Graduation will be coming up, birthdays, anniversaries, and so forth. So it's a two coin special, $515 for both the uncirculated $5 gold piece, which is a quarter ounce, and a silver dollar uncirculated proof, and these are both proof coins. So $515, and give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. I'm sure I didn't give it justice as far as the description, but they're just really neat coins. And when I was looking for something a little bit different, I came across these, and they have both the gold and silver, and I thought it would make a really neat little package. So, and again, it shows a picture of him on the front, and then you also have a steamboat with the paddle wheel that is visible. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And as I said, I only have a few of these available, so get on board.
I got a question from the chat room. With robots being widespread, where are people supposed to work? And it's going to be a question that's going to be increasingly important. I was watching a video today on robots in Japan. And they've got something called Now, N-A-O. They've got another one called Asimov. And they've got a number of them. The Japanese are leading the creation of man-like robots. And some of it is really quite fantastic. I mean, they've got some of these that are now up to where they can run, right? Probably as well as I can, which isn't all that good at my age. They can run. They've got their hands can do things that are pretty much amazing. And you can expect there's going to be more of this and more of this as time goes by. In fact, I have a suspicion. The Japanese are at the forefront of creating robots. And I'm wondering, as nutty as this idea sounds, are the Japanese building man-like robots to replace the children they're not having? Now, I know that's a bizarre question, but the truth is, Japanese young people aren't reproducing. Right? They're just going out and trying to enjoy their lives, and they don't want to have kids. And they don't have the reproduction rate isn't high enough to continue to sustain Japan. And I'm wondering, how many people are sitting there and say, why don't we build some of these robots? We could have a robot instead of a child.
That's why you buy a dog, Al.
No, this is the reason. I mean,
Japanese,
the dogs are still a problem. You got to feed them. You got to walk them. You got a bunch of things. You've got a bunch of problems with dogs. Now, for example, no one anticipates building a robot that's going to need a diaper. You understand? Robots don't need diapers. If you could see the video, I mean, this is spectacular. It's scary. And the question, here's somebody, robots instead of wives. They're building robots over there that look like women, for God's sake.
How about robots instead of husbands?
Well, before it's done, I don't know, you know. We are moving into a brave new world. There's no question about it. So the question in the chat room, where are people supposed to work as we have a growing incidence of robots in this world? And I guarantee you it's going to be a big problem. The point, somewhere along the line, there's got to be some sort of an association between money going to people who aren't working from robots that are working. And if we just set it up where the only people who profit from the robots are the ones who invested in them, Well, we're going to have super rich, but we're also going to have a stack of dead bodies. I mean, something's got to be done, and I don't know what it is. It's going to take, you better unearth Solomon, because we're going to need some extraordinary wisdom to deal with this growing problem. We got a call from Jim in West Virginia. What up, Jim?
Oh, a couple of short comments. I cannot help but praise you greatly for bringing up the issue that production is what it's all about, wealth production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Taking something of little no value, increasing its value as a result of human endeavor called work. America seems to have forgotten that. Now, we need to start seeing these people who are counterproductive. They are predatory, parasitic, cannibalistic, carnivorous regulators. I've run into them, believe me. Oh, let's pass a new law for the coal mining preparation plants. We have to paint the top step and the bottom step yellow. And that means every time an inspector comes through, you can say, oh, you don't have, there's not enough yellow paint on here. That's the garbage. They need to be seen as enemies. I have watched inspectors. You know, people are bellyache about coal miners making $150 a day. I've seen inspectors walk in and walk out 2 hours later with $3,000, $4,000, $5,000
yeah.
fines. But they need to be seen as an enemy of the people.
Yeah.
And you're also spot on when you mention the middle class is being attacked. Now, one other time I came on air and I said, there are four types of people, protectors, predators, parasites, and producers. And the simple truth of the matter is the predator parasites have taken over so many resources, and who do we take it from?
Yeah.
Can't take it from the protectors, can't take it from each other. They have to come from the producers. And who are the biggest producers? The middle class.
Yeah.
The upper class manipulates wealth and steals wealth. The lower class simply doesn't produce as much wealth as does the middle class. This explains why there's nothing to eat in Venezuela, because they destroyed the wealth-producing class. Now, if we can get this across the American people, this wealth production is what it's about. It's wealth production, not consumerism. If we can get that across,
we're going to learn this lesson. We're going to get this lesson across the American people, but they may be eating out of garbage cans before they get the message.
You're right.
They're going to get this. They're going to understand this, but it may be in the midst of brutal poverty and an extraordinary decline in the standard of living that say, holy cow, does anybody here know how to produce anything? You could be our God if you know how to produce anything. We'll follow you anyway. Just tell us what to do.
Now, my only thing I'm going to ask of you is this. Keep beating that drum the same way you beat so many other drums. It's all about wealth production, real wealth. I could talk about wealth production all day and never mention a currency. It has to do with bales of cotton, bushels of corn, barrels of oil, incidentally a barrel is 44 gallons, and tons of steel. That's a real wealth production. Now, if we get a real wealth production in line, everything else will fall in line. But we've got to get the carnivorous, predatory, parasitic, I've got to watch my tongue, out of the economic system. And they're all private corporations. EPA is a private corporation. Anybody can shut them down because they're racketeering. They don't pay income taxes. That's tax fraud. They don't have a license to do business in your state. If they have an armed person working for the EPA, they're impersonating a policeman. Let's go after their Achilles heel. Keep beating the drums, bud. Okay?
We'll do what we can.
All right.
Thanks,
Jim,
to both.
Thank you.
Thanks to both.
You know,
bye-bye.
Thank you, Jim. This idea about productivity. You know, we talk about you getting a slice of the pie. Everybody wants a slice of the pie. But it's like the story of the little red hen. Baking bread. Nobody helps her harvest the wheat. Nobody helps her bake, grind the wheat. Nobody helps her bake the bread. And when it's finally baked, then we want to taste your bread. And she's saying, buzz off. You didn't work here. You didn't produce the bread. You didn't produce any part of it. What entitles you to have some? And we have a mentality in this country that there are millions of people who are simply entitled to have things that they haven't worked to produce. And it can't work. It can't last. It's communistic thinking, and it will go the same way as the former Soviet Union. It'll take this country down to where it disintegrates into half a dozen states, half a dozen regions, maybe more than that. I don't know. But you can't do this. It's just stupid. And we've got people, especially, we hear the liberal mentality. Oh, we've got to help the poor and rested. Well, yeah, I get that. We have an obligation. But we don't have an obligation to make poverty more attractive than work. It can't be. It can't be. Or at least it can't be for long. It can be for a little while. We can have some idiots who go out and pander to the public and say, you vote for me and I'll see that there's a chicken in every pot and you don't even have to raise chickens or clean up after them. Because you're special. Because of your race. Because of your gender. Because of your age. Everybody's special. And the only thing that's really special is the people that actually work for a living in a productive capacity. And that doesn't include government workers. They don't make a productive contribution. They're not contributing. When we have that pie you want to divide up, let's all have a slice of pie. The government doesn't put any blueberries or apples in that pie. They don't provide the crust. They don't cook. They don't pay for the gas to heat the pie and bake it. But they want a cut, Bo. Oh, yeah. We talk about the parasites that are super rich. And the parasites that are super poor, and the parasites that are getting fat working for government. And none of them are productive. Not to the extent that they are consuming. And I don't know how it's going to be resolved, but I know that in the end, if you want to eat, you must honor whoever it is that's producing the food. And if you want to honor the people that are on welfare or on government subsidies for the rich, welfare for the poor, high levels of pay, double what they can make in the private sector for federal employees. You want to continue with that? You're going to live in the poorhouse, folks. If you are a worker, you are headed for poverty. And you are going to be not only just headed for poverty, you're going to be put under circumstances where people are going to practically put a whip to your back to make you work. Because you're productive. We know you're productive. Don't deny it. Get out there and produce something. So the rest of us can kick back and chill out. The world is coming to a very difficult situation, and I don't know how it's going to work out, and I don't know how fast it's going to get here, but there's no doubt that we're going there. There isn't going to be a pie unless we have productive people. And insofar as the people who say they're entitled to a piece of pie, what for? What did you build? What did you create? What did you construct? What did you contribute? You just show up and now you're entitled? The only thing any one of us is entitled to, we're not entitled to one nickel that we haven't earned ourselves by means of hard work. None of us are. If you didn't work to earn it, you're not entitled to it. And if you're getting something without working, you should be grateful to whoever it is giving you something that you haven't earned. And generally speaking, the parasites and the welfare recipients, they just sit back and say, they're not grateful. They just say, hey, well, I want more. I want a bigger slice of the pie and a bigger slice of the pie. I'm not going to work. I have no intention of working. I can't work. Maybe I'm too ignorant to work. Maybe, there's 100 excuses for it, or, at least a half a dozen.
Well, one of them is there's no jobs for them either.
Well, I get it.
Uh-huh.
It's a complex situation.
It is.
I mean, this is not easily resolved, and it won't be done by just, but there is a question of emphasis where people are going to have to figure out, look, we need the producers more than we need the consumers. We've had a consumer economy for the last 30, 40 years. That whole emphasis, shop till you drop, is crazy. But we have shopped, and now we are going to drop. And we're going to drop precisely because we were busy consuming and shopping. We were not busy producing. We let our productive industries go overseas. I mean, this has been mismanaged to the point of being, it's not just negligence, this is treason. We have people in Washington that have been working steadily and persistently to destroy this country. And they get away with it because the people don't get it. They don't care. All they sit back, most people are sitting back and say, where's my slice of the pie? I'm entitled to some of the pie. And I'm saying, you're not entitled to anything if you didn't help produce the pie. You don't just get to show up and say, I'm so special, I get some. If you don't work to earn it, you're not entitled. Let's take a break for more commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, we got an email in from one of the listeners, and he says, welfare is not an entitlement, technically, and under the TANF, which was temporary assistance for needy families, it's a lot harder to game the system than under the old AFDC. Social Security and Medicare are entitlements, and they are holies of holies, untouchable. And we talked about this during the break, and I sort of disagreed. I think, you know, when it comes to needy families, it should be churches. It used to be churches that helped families. Your local communities were set up to where they could help needy families. I mean, even Social Security, you pay into it. Medicare, you pay into it. So,
which means you're not exactly... It's not an entitlement per se, since you actually made an investment. It's not just walking in and say, here I am, feed me. It's a question of saying, look, I've been contributing into Social Security for a number of years, and it's only reasonable that I be compensated for what I'd contributed.
No, that's not saying that Social Security certainly doesn't have its problems, and even some Social Security is given to folks that, it's...
You're right about the charity aspect, all right? The problem, one of the big problems we have is that we have lost our understanding and appreciation for charity.
Mm-hmm.
And it has cost us dearly to do that. I saw two studies by, this goes back into the 1990s, and I can't think of the commission the Grace Commission. It was the Grace Commission. They did a couple of studies back in the 1990s. The studies were maybe 2 years apart, maybe three, I don't recall clearly. But the first one calculated that for every dollar that was collected from a taxpayer that was supposed to serve a particular need for women, for children, for the unemployed, for welfare, for whatever. The government said, we're going to take a dollar from you and we're going to help these poor people over here. Only 25% of that dollar, 25 cents, reached the intended beneficiary. The people that were working were kicking in a dollar to help poor people, but the poor people were only getting a quarter. Right? And who was consuming the other 75 cents? It was government and government-approved middlemen. And when you begin to understand that for every dollar you give government for some great and wonderful purpose, they're keeping 75% of it for themselves, you can see why government is growing and prospering, and the rest of us are being driven into poverty. We would be better off if we took care of our own. Right? And get the government out of the charity business, because that's ultimately what we're talking about with income redistribution. If we, instead of giving a dollar to government and only 25 cents gets to the intended beneficiary, poor person, whoever, how about I gave 50 cents to the poor person? All right? Get the government out of the equation. Instead of spending a dollar that goes to government to support these programs, I spend 50 cents giving it directly to the guy who needs the money. He, instead of getting 25 cents on the dollar that was contributed, he gets 50 cents. He's got twice as much. He should be happy, or at least happier than he was. I'm not paying as much. I'm only paying half as much. I'm paying 50 cents instead of sending the dollar to the government. I'm happier. The only people that are unhappy are the government. Who cares?
Well, there's a lot of charities, you know, other than the government. I mean, you do have the Red Cross and so forth, but so much of those monies also goes into, you know, their elite, and very, very little of it gets funneled down to the people who really need it. Churches, your local churches, you know, they give more overseas sometimes than to their true local communities. I mean, some churches do a great job and so forth, but I can remember 9/11.
They don't need to give it to the local
community
because the government does that.
Well, the whole point is they don't do it anymore, and they should do it.
I know.
But,
I agree with you. And you know, there's another side to it. If the churches were fundamentally responsible for caring for the poor, probably have a lot more poor people going to church. You're not just going to walk in and say, hey, and walk into the Methodist church and say, I'd like some money. Say, who are you? I just blew into town. You know, I just stopped in. I thought I'd stop in and get a little money. Got to be a member of the church to get some of that money. And people begin to understand this is part of your, it's like contributing to Social Security. You go to church once a week. You're making your own contribution in your own way. No, you're maybe not putting money in the, maybe you are, maybe you're not putting money when they pass the hat. But the point is part of your obligation. You want to collect Social Security? You got to contribute to Social Security. You want to be able to get charity from the church? You got to go to church. I don't see that the world would be harmed. You know, I think if we were more inclined to maintain charity at the local, in our local community, I think we'd all be better off, with the exception of Washington, D.C., and the government employees, officers, and officials. So what's next?
I can remember 9/11. The churches, everybody was collecting to send money to New York. Our church collected. And it was voted on, we would send it to the local Salvation Army, because all of your local communities, all the Salvation Armies, started to hurt because of the money that was usually given to them. It was all being sent to New York after 9/11. So, you know, I just happened to be with a great church, and, you know, we, you know, donated, and the funds went to the local Salvation Army. So there are things that you should do locally, and we should do it.
It's cheaper. Like I say, Grace Commission, again, concluded only 25%, and that was in their first study. They did another one 2 years later or thereabouts, and that time they concluded only 20% was going to the intended beneficiary.
Well, here's another example. You have food stamps. That's the users knew near, and again, even though supposedly the government numbers, which I don't believe anyway, and we've talked about the numbers, you know, they can be anywhere from, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25%, and some have even been higher. We still have a large number of people on food stamps that remains near an all-time high. So, what's next, Al?
I got an article here on Trump from the Washington Times. It was published early this morning. And the headline is, Trump eyes Super Tuesday landslide as Republicans beg voters to back away. Here's the headline. GOP presidential field mounted a last-ditch effort to derail Donald Trump ahead of Super Tuesday's slate of primaries. Stunned by polls showing Mr. Trump easily leading in most of the dozen states that vote Tuesday, and a poll showing him approaching majority support among Republicans nationwide, Republican leaders, strategists, and candidates pleaded with voters to back away from Mr. Trump. They're essentially saying, don't vote for this guy. Don't show up at the polls. Leave him alone. Don't support him. You know, the problem we've got here, this is the sort of thing that just infuriates me about the Republican Party. I don't know how great the problem is in Republican leadership that are opposed to Trump. But you would think that if the Republican Party, meaning the rank and file members, not the leaders, rank and file, ordinary guys and girls who are members of the Republican Party, they're the ones that have moved Trump up to the number one position in the race for the nomination. The majority or a significant plurality of the Republican Party is saying, we want Trump. And the leaders are saying, they don't want Trump, and they're not going to cooperate. They're going to do what they can to sandbag Trump. In doing so, they are essentially saying, screw you to the rank and file members of the Republican Party. They said, we don't care what you want. We don't care if a majority of the Republican Party wants this guy Trump. We don't want him, and we're not here to serve you. We're not here to lead you. We are here to control you. And there was an article from Zero Hedge came out today also. And the headline was, the GOP is on the verge of a meltdown. Senior Republicans threaten to vote for Hillary. We have Republican leaders, senior leaders in the Republican Party, who say they would rather vote for Hillary Clinton than allow Trump to become president and essentially try to implement the will of the rank and file in the Republican Party. When they do this, they're saying, we don't care about the rank and file. They're just along for the ride. We're the guys that control this thing, and those are just our little puppets, and we'll go out and give them some lip service from time to time. And what I'm saying is that this is one of the reasons why people are offended by the Republican Party. Republicans think, you got no place else to go. You're not going to turn out to be a Democrat, are you? People say, no, I'm not going to be a Democrat. Well, then the only option you got is you either vote Republican or you don't vote at all. And we don't care, because the people that are running the Republican Party at the top and the people that are running the Democrat Party at the top are both working for the same singular establishment that's in favor of bigger government, a new world order, whatever. They are engaged in treason against the people of the United States of America. And here comes, and the public has figured this out. They sense it. If they don't articulate it, they at least sense it. And it's part of the reason they say, yeah, we're going to vote for Trump. We're going to vote for him. It's not just because Trump is some genius. It's because Trump is not part of the establishment. And part of the reason people are in favor of Trump is they're saying, look, he's not part of the political establishment. Yes, he's rich. Yes, he's a billionaire. I get that. But he comes across as a guy who is legitimately opposed to whatever it is that's running both the Republican and Democrat parties. And for that reason alone, a lot of people are saying, I'm voting for Trump. Well, the idea that Republican leadership would turn their backs on someone that the Republican rank and file want to nominate, there's something wrong with that. And it's evidence of a kind of treachery, hypocrisy, evidence that there are people in positions of power in the Republican Party that don't care about Republican ideals. They don't care about it. They are the rhinos, the Republicans in name only. They don't care. And this is a classic illustration of that problem. We've got people that are saying, yeah, we're Republicans, but we're not voting for Trump. If they nominate him, we won't vote for him. We won't support him. They're saying to heck with the Republican Party. They'll destroy the Republican Party, and they claim to be Republicans. They'll trash the Republican Party before they support Trump. And this again, you know, ignore the will of the people. They're not here to represent the people. They're here to control us. Trump is an extraordinary candidate, not because he's brilliant, not because, you know, we will live happily ever after if Trump gets elected. If he gets elected, he may be just as disappointing as Obama or G.W. Bush or Clinton or any of the rest of them we've had for who knows how long. All right. But Trump is not, the support for Trump is not just about Trump will beat Hillary. Well, maybe he will and maybe he won't. But the support for Trump coming from rank and file Republicans is a way of sticking their thumb in the eye of the Republican establishment that thinks they own and operate the Republican Party. Trump is not what the establishment wants. Bang. That means he's the guy the rank and file are for. He may not be the hero or the savior, whatever that some of us are hoping. But he is sticking his thumb in the establishment's eye, and so is everyone who supports Trump. And from my perspective, that's enough. A lot of people are sitting back and say, yeah, yeah, yeah. We may not win the election, but we're going to get you guys in the establishment. You're not running this thing. And therefore, we've got this headline from Zero Hedge that says the Republican GOP is on the verge of a meltdown. Yeah, they are. Right? Because the establishment, in the same sense, the Federal Reserve is running out of economic resources like ZERP and quantitative easing, zero interest rate policy. It's not working. They've admitted it in a bunch of different forums from a number of different countries. It just says this stuff doesn't work. They don't have any more control. Well, to some degree, the same thing has happened to the Republican Party. They're sitting back, the leadership of the Republican Party, who thinks they're running this thing, are beginning to understand maybe they're not. And I think that's a good thing. Right? They want to be Republicans. They're going to have to go along with the program. They don't want to go along with the program. Get out. Don't vote. Go away. Don't need you. So anyway, interesting. We'll see what happens tonight. As of this morning, people were predicting that Trump was going to win in a number of states, big, maybe by a landslide, but big in any case. And there's a dozen states voting, and if Trump carries most of them, I won't say that the nominations are over, the nomination contest is over, but it'll be tough to unseat Trump if he wins, say, 7, maybe 8 of today's primaries. If he can pull it off, more than likely he's going to be the Republican nominee for president. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, with the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.